Welcome to CYC Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 118. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. Like the interview last month with Liam, I'm recording this interview today from the Unity Through Relationship Conference in Dublin, Ireland. And today I'm speaking with Maria Lotti. Maria is a practicing fostering social worker and a PhD student at the University College Cork here in Ireland. Maria has a background in youth work, residential social work, and child protection. Maria is currently undertaking a research collaboration with UCC and Tulsa Family and Child Agency. The research involves the design, development, and evaluation of Fostering Connections, a trauma-informed foster care program. And trauma-informed foster care is exactly what we're speaking about today. Thank you for joining me today, Maria.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I sat in on your session this morning and I really enjoyed it. I thought you brought up a lot of really great topics, and we don't have time to go through everything you did in your presentation today. Maybe we could just start with some grounding knowledge. What do you mean when you use the term trauma? Because I think trauma is thrown around all the time now. So what are we speaking about when we speak about trauma?
Well, when I'm talking about trauma, I'm really looking at it from the experience of children who come into the foster care system. And I suppose my experience is based as a practitioner in, you know, where I work, which is the Cork area. Mm-hmm. So I suppose that's what I want to talk about. So for trauma, mm-hmm. for me, it's really this conceptualization called developmental trauma. So it's based on the work of Bessel van der Kolk and Alexander Cook. So I have been looking at that as part of my research, and it's the experience that is prolonged, cumulative, chronic and repetitive. So it's not like an acute form of trauma where it's a once off, or it's not like even maybe an experience such as child sexual abuse, where, you know, a child is living within a very safe, secure family. It's the type of trauma I'm looking at is developmental trauma. So children who experience that, it goes unrepaired, and they don't have the safety and they don't have those secure attachments. So it's quite specific, because that's the program that I wanted to develop, was to target developmental trauma. Sometimes it's referred to as complex trauma in the literature, but I like the term developmental trauma because of the impact it has on the development of the child. Hmm. So, you know, I prefer to use that term. It's a more comprehensive. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I think the developmental trauma is a nice frame, because there is this sense of prolonged and cumulative. You know, when we speak about development, of course, that's how we speak of development. So that, you know, complex trauma, I find a bit of an abstract term myself, and it can be a bit confusing as to what that
means.
It
is complex. Like, it is complex, yes, but I don't, and then, you know, I suppose this definition that I'm using, building on the absolute, you know, expertise, particularly Bessel van der Kolk, as I would be, I have read a lot of his work, which has really informed the research I'm doing. You know, he and his colleagues came up with the seven areas of impairment, they call it. You know, it's probably familiar to a lot of people, but I mean, that just gives a great comprehensive picture of how trauma impacts children in foster care, because the children in foster care's experience of trauma is, you know, it is witnessing domestic violence, it's physical abuse, it is sexual abuse, it's, you know, emotional abuse, it's, you know, all of those chronic forms of abuse, but it's usually prolonged, and it's overwhelming and unrepaired. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody's gone back. So when they come into care, the impact is continuing. So it doesn't stop when they come into, you know, a lovely, secure family that have all the right motivations to want to help this child. They actually still have that experience of developmental trauma is ongoing in all aspects of their development. And I think that conceptualization has been really helpful to me as a practitioner, because you know, I'm of the vintage where, you know, we learned about the signs and symptoms of child abuse.
Right.
And I suppose the thing about developmental trauma, the defining feature is that it occurs within the caregiving relationship. And that's why the impact is so pervasive.
And this is the relationship, ideally, prior to care.
Prior, so, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Hopefully.
We would hope.
Yes,
yeah.
I mean, of course, there are some extreme situations.
Most abuse or trauma, if you want to, or maltreatment happens within the home, you know?
Yeah. And I would think that the very act as well of going into care... could be considered as another element of, you know, of that developmental trauma potentially. Yep. Hopefully it's the beginning of the stopping of it.
Yes, hopefully. You know, foster care is an experiment that I think has worked. I mean, it is, I suppose, generally speaking, it does a lot of the time what I suppose we concentrate on the children that it doesn't work for and trying to improve that. And it is an enormous task for any family to take on a child that has experienced developmental trauma. But yes, I would agree, the actual experience of coming into care can be quite traumatizing for children. And, you know, within the care system, then children often, I don't want to use the word often, but have experienced trauma within care. And because of their, you know, their high needs and the challenging behaviours or, you know, emotional behaviour difficulties they have, placements can break down. So then they experience the trauma of moving placements, which is a huge problem. So I suppose all those things happen even after they've entered foster care. So I suppose my programme that I'm trying to develop... you know, I'm the coordinator of the research, that the project, but, you know, there's a whole group of people behind me helping and part of it as well, that it is to target developmental trauma and to stop children moving.
And so your program is what you're calling trauma-informed, and this is another word that it's tossed around a lot, and it could be helpful for us to have some framework around it. When you say trauma-informed, what do you mean? What does trauma-informed care look like?
Yeah, for me, the core of it I've based on Howard Bath's model, the three pillars of trauma-informed care. And, you know, that is safety, connection, and coping. I suppose they would be the three core. And, you know, I think we, as, you know, for myself, you know, as a practitioner, I can be trauma-informed, but there's something for me, trauma-informed care is really kind of targeting the people that care for the children. Do you know, it's slightly different. When I talk about trauma-informed care, it is an approach, it is a framework, but it's not the type of trauma-informed approach a psychologist might offer in the one-to-one session. You know, that kind of professional, and they're put in the expert position. For me, there's something about the word care as well, because it's, you know, it's... And care, I don't know if this translates, but, you know, we have an expression here in Ireland, mind the care. The care is your family, you know, the people you love. So, do you know, the fact... I mean, that might not be what Howard Bath was saying, but I suppose I've tried to extend his model. And to me, it's really about, developing a model that fits within fostering, that is about that relationship between the child and the foster care. If that makes sense. So I've extended his model too. I mean, I've used his three core, but I wanted to contextualize it into... you know, the Irish system and culture, you know, so that's how I've developed the program, right, by bringing those elements into.
So I want to talk about the program then at this point in time. You've developed what you call six key principles based partly on Bath's work. What are the six principles, and how are those used in with foster parents, or how is it taught to foster care providers?
Well, the first principle is called trauma in mind, and that really is about developing foster carers' knowledge and understanding of how trauma develop. When I talk about trauma, I mean developmental trauma, how that actually impacts the child, how it changes their developmental trajectory in those seven areas that Bessel van der Kolk describes. And the second part of that is actually how does caring for a child who has experienced trauma impact on you as a foster carer? So it's two very separate things, but they are very connected. So that's my first principle, that, it's about informing, it's developing a mindset where foster care understands what that impact does to the child, but also what it does to themselves.
Right. And that idea that we are going to be affected. I remember I was talking to someone recently who adopted, and she was talking about sort of the early days when she adopted and the need to create this predictable structure, right? And day after day after day, she said, you know, it was driving her bonkers because every single day she knew what she was going to be doing every minute of every day for this child, to create this sense of safety and predictability. And how did it affect her and her partner when the child was doing all these behaviors, right? And so understanding, I think, that...
Well, the understanding actually shifts the mindset. Instead of thinking about what's wrong with you, it's what has happened to you. And that came from actually a foster carer. And, you know, it's just depersonalizing the behavior. And it's not about the carer. It's about the child. You know, I say to them in the program, it's never about you. It's never about you. And, you know, slowly over the 6 weeks, it's like, God, it's not about me. You know, and you can see it's a process, it's a journey. And people go through that, hopefully, through the program, and they become more trauma-informed. So for me, being trauma-informed is a mindset. It's having trauma in mind is the way. So that's my first principle. Mm-hmm. The second principle, you've already touched on it there, is around safety. So this idea, Howard Bath and Larry Brentrow talks a lot about it too, of felt safety. So it's not about having the stair gates up or knowing what time the 15-year-old has to be home. It's, you know, it's that feeling of a psychological type of safety. And it's really hard to create that and, you know, create that atmosphere within a home, because these children, I mean, they're coming from such chronic experiences of, you know, trauma. Some of the stories that I just heard in the program that I've just run it there recently, you know, it's you know, very, very, you know, you think in this day and age in the developed world, but my God, you know, evil things are still happening and children are experiencing horrendous things. So creating that safety, is it takes a lot of skill and tools. So that's the basis. So if you look at developmental trauma as a thing that dysregulates all aspects of a child's behaviour, the first thing you need to put in place is the safety.
And how do we create that safety? I just gave the example of that predictability. What are some of the other tools that we use to create safety?
I think it's becoming very reflective as a foster carer and not reacting to the child's. So we have a thing called the stop technique. So it's, you know, where you literally stop and pause before you respond. And it's just building kind of small little tools into how a foster carer can say, okay, this isn't about me now. I'm just going to wait a minute. And so it's being less reactive and responding more appropriately. And one of the big things is actually what the foster carers really like is, because of the first principle about understanding how trauma impacts, they understand what a trauma trigger is. So they get to, I mean, they know all this stuff anyway. I mean, I think trauma-informed care gives them a framework, gives them the words. That's what they're saying. You've now given me the words, you know. But I mean, if you're fostering 10, 20, 30 years, you know, you're trauma-informed. You know what I mean? You know, but I suppose this has come along and has just given, it's really helpful. I think it's very beneficial as a practitioner and, you know, as someone caring. But so the calming techniques are huge. So recognizing the triggers, knowing what the triggers do to the child's biology. So that's like the flight, fright, freeze, shutdown mode. So like once they recognize that, once they recognize what trauma does to attachment. So they, you know, when the child is being avoidant or when the child is being really clingy or anxious, they recognize this is a need that I need to respond to. This isn't the child just, you know, being really difficult, or, you know, we say here bold, you know, you'd hear that a lot in Ireland. You know, the child isn't being bold. This is, you know, an adaptive strategy that they learned. So giving that information to somebody, it just changes. Right. So going back to your question, it's about, and then recognizing the triggers, then developing calming techniques. So mindfulness, breathing exercises, you know, we have a thing called the quiet corner for children where they, you know, you can create, you know, a safe, you know, the child's still connected with you, but it has a place to calm. Just lots of, there's a toolkit that is that I developed along with help of, you know, my colleagues, attached to the program. So they get to keep all of these exercises and ideas, and they try them out then week to week. So
nice.
There are lots of things, but yeah. It's really targeting dysregulation, bringing the response down. You know, the whole idea of attunement and co-regulating with the child goes back to Howard Bath again,
nice.
I suppose. So.
And principle number three?
Three, okay. It's about, I suppose, I call it relationships in mind. And it's about attachment. It's about attunement. So it's kind of builds, you need the safety first. So I suppose it's like a triangle. You need, for me, knowledge, you know, is at the bottom of your safety. And then once you come to a place, now, I mean, you know, stages go in and out and backwards and forwards. It's not linear, you know, nothing in life is straightforward, let's face it. So, you know, building the connections, you know, and a lot of, you know, what Tom Garfitt was saying, that whole idea of, you know, how do you build an attachment? You actually start by making connections with the child. So it's in the 24 hours, the other 24 hours that we talk about in CYC, and just those moments. And so now in the program, we do look at attachment styles, and, you know, I really like the work of Daniel Siegel, and he's really translated a lot of his attachment research into very user-friendly kind of, he loves acronyms, so, you know, he's got, and I love acronyms, seemingly you either love them or you don't, so I don't know where you stand on that, but you know, he talks about the seven non-verbal communications of attunement. And I mean, you know, we know this, because if someone hands you a baby, what are you going to do straight away? You're going to smile, you're going to make eye contact. Mm-hmm. But actually, you know, really getting the foster carers to break it all down and then think about attunement with a big 6'5", 15-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, you can't sit him on your lap,
yeah.
But like, how do you find ways to attune? So there's a lot around relationships, but I suppose having... the great thing about trauma-informed care is the safety underneath that, because that's a new, I suppose for me, you know, the work of Alan Shore, regulation theory, that's kind of a newer part of attachment theory from when I trained.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of building that in before you go down into attachment, because you can't build attachments unless you have all that in place first.
Yeah.
So that's number three.
I really like how you're framing this sort of as a, you know, just as the trauma is developmental, the informed practice is also developmental, right? And it layers, and we start building a relationship the moment we meet somebody, and we recognize that it is an ongoing, long-term process, and that we're not going to build a relationship if we don't feel safe. And you know, as you say, breaking it down sort of into the steps so that people understand what they're doing and how to do it.
One of the videos I show, and I use a lot of videos because I think the visual is really good. It's not very literature-based, because the foster kids didn't want that, and that was part of my preliminary research. They wanted visual, and so I use a lot of videos. And one of the videos I use is the still-face baby experiment, you know, Dr. Tronick. And I mean, it's just, I mean, people are crying, you know, it's just so powerful.
Yeah.
They actually see attunement happening. So you can translate that then into whatever age. Well, I do a lot of experiential exercises to look, and I've 4 case studies, and each case study is of a different age child. So we look at those children stay with us in the program, you know?
Yeah.
So, Yeah, nice. People have to feel it to, I think, you know, to, they actually have to experience for it to be, to go on the process, on the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Number four.
Number four, coping in mind. So I suppose that really is about helping children to develop the skills and, I suppose, resilience in meeting their developmental needs. So it's a difficult one. We talk a lot about behaviour in that session, I suppose. But the idea is that, you know, it's about developing resilience, and it's about how do children develop resilience. So it takes more than one person. It starts with attachment with the foster care, but sometimes foster carers can be, maybe gatekeeper is a bit strong for word, but they are the person that can open the doors for other children to meet other people, that can help them have other connections and other relationships. And they need, you know, they need permission, and they need to be facilitated to do that. So the whole idea of development, it's that, that is, I talk a lot about child development and how you look at the different aspects of development. So what, there's an exercise that I use that is called the jigsaw puzzle exercise. And it was created by a woman in America who's kindly given me, and I've forgotten her name now, so you're going to have to, I'll have to come back to that. You'll have to edit this. What's her, I'll look that up for you. But it's this great exercise of, if you look at a child's development in terms of a jigsaw puzzle, so there's 9 key areas. So I get them to take one of the children that they're currently fostering and examine each areas of the development. So very quickly it comes apparent the gaps in their development, and then it's about what you do to try and, you know, help that child fill that gap, go back. So it could be, you know, it could be around regulation, it could be around schoolwork, it could be, do you know, you might have a 16-year-old who is operating at 10, or you could have a 10-year-old who looks like 16, you know, so it's an interesting way of looking at it.
So when you say about coping, it's recognizing the skills a young person has developed to cope. It's recognizing me as a foster care provider, what I need to do to cope.
Yes. Yeah.
So all of the above.
So the foster care, because you see, they're in the most crucial position. Mm-hmm. You know, they're there. The magic happens between them and the child. So, you know, they're the ones who are going to see the developmental gaps. They are, I mean, the one of the case studies we used was based on a child that I, you know, that was received into care, and you know, the within a few months the foster carer identified they actually thought the child was blind, but it was just lack of stimulation. So within 2 months the child was making eye contact, and every medic had examined this baby, do you know. So I suppose that's a stark example, but that child had a lot of developmental issues. Mm-hmm. But nobody was going to find them quicker than the person who was the babe in arms. So do you know, and for the older children too, I mean, it's the foster care will identify the developmental gaps. So it's kind of, before we used to talk about developmental delays. Mm-hmm. So I suppose now we're talking about developmental gaps, because the gaps can be filled, you know. That's the thing about trauma-informed care. If you recognize it, you can work about, and you know, the whole neurobiology of it, you know, we can train our brains, you know, to develop new ways, new pathways, so we can learn new skills at any age. So it's just finding them and getting the carer to practice them.
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot in that module as well, and that principle, I suppose, there's a lot of stuff around behavior in the program as well, dealing with in a more trauma-informed, connective kind of approach, a time in rather than a time out. You don't mention time out on this program anyway. It's like,
that's,
it's good. That, you know, it's all about keeping connected, the whole idea of being connected. Yeah.
Nice. Number five.
Number five, then, resilience in mind, I've called that, and that really is about developing, fostering resilience. So it's kind of a development, really, I suppose. I looked at all the resilience theory literature, and the science of resilience, which is kind of big. It's kind of in trend at the moment. But and I've looked at research on what actually makes foster carers resilient. What keeps them in fostering? How do they sustain their fostering? And one of the key things was empathy, and it's extending the idea of empathy beyond having empathy for a child, which that can come, I suppose, to a lot of us very easily, but having empathy for the birth family, having empathy for the, you know, the practitioners around the child, even the system, and, you know, people who have that compassion tend to, you know, have that resiliency. So I do in the program some exercises about looking at that and looking at finding compassion for birth parents, which can be often that can be a difficult area. In Ireland, there's a lot of court directed access where at times children it's re-traumatizing. And it's quite difficult for foster carers to see beyond that. But this idea of empathy, I think that's what I'm trying to do to create foster care resilience. And obviously the whole idea of self-care is hugely important in trauma-informed care, that foster carers have to develop ways in minding themselves because of this huge secondary trauma. They're experiencing, a huge... That was one of the things that has come out of the first run of the program is the emotional impact of going on this journey. I knew it was coming, but I didn't, and I put safeguards into the program, you know, lots of safety, and they said they did feel safe, but I was overwhelmed by this. The emotion, they were just shattered after it. And the facilitators were shattered too. Right. You know, it was exhausting. It took a lot out of them.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And so important that there's that space for them to go through that experience, that have the community, have the support, because they're going to be shattered in their work if they don't have this opportunity. And so as we move towards the end, what's the sixth principle?
Number six is, I've called that teamwork in mind. And that really is about foster carers becoming effective members of the team that supports the child. So it gives the child the best chance of a positive outcome. And that, I suppose, that's the thing that in Ireland, it's a bit contentious because a lot of the time the foster carer isn't brought to the table, isn't invited to the professional meeting, the strategy meeting. And I suppose I want foster carers, because they are the absolute key people in the child's recovery beyond the child himself, you know, but they're the ones that can develop that environment and atmosphere for the child to begin the healing process, that they need to be recognised and valued. And I suppose part of what I've said to them, you also need to present yourself and communicate, and, you know, it's been effective. So being trauma-informed, you can become, I'm hoping to find the evidence, an effective member. So being, in that team. Yeah. So that's a bit of a shift, I suppose, for the system that we're working in at the moment. That means they get all the information. That can be contentious, you know. They're more involved in the decision making at the moment. They're very much outside.
Right. And of course, it makes sense that those who spend time with the young people be at the table.
Well, who know them best?
Exactly. Yes. Absolutely.
And I appreciate it's very emotional for them, and sometimes. Because it was something that came out of the research that's some of the foster carers said that sometimes an objective view is helpful, and maybe they're too close to it. And I actually didn't think of that myself. I think you should be at the table. But so it's part of giving them the tools and the skills. You know, it's not about just coming to the table. You need to be trauma informed. You need the knowledge, the skills, and, you know, and be effective. so.
I think that the principles, the trauma in mind, safety in mind, relationships in mind, coping in mind, resilience in mind, and teamwork in mind, I think it's a really nice frame. And I know that you tailored it specifically to an Ireland context. And from my reading, you know, I think it's certainly translatable into you know, where I work in Canada. We're at the end, and I want to wrap this up. I know you're in process of developing your research, so I'm looking forward to what you find as you move along. Just as we close, is there anything else around this idea of trauma and informed fostering that there's lots we didn't touch on, but anything that you want to say?
You know, one of the things that brought me to it in the first place was this idea of hope. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted to have one of my principles as hope in mind, but my academic supervisors were like saying that might be going too far. But I am, my seventh session, as you can see, there's six sessions there that attach to the principles. I mean, they weave in and out. But after the six sessions, the foster carers do get a seventh session, 4 months on. It's a follow-up, and I have called that hope in mind. And it really is, you know, this idea, we need hope. You know, I'm a social worker, but, you know, when I was a youth worker, residential, you know, you can't keep going. You have to have that motivation. And I do think that's the gift of trauma-informed care. It has brought back the hope and the optimism to my practice. And it has, I think, given it to foster carers, or what's one foster carer said, they always had hope, but now they have the tools to realise the hope, you know? Mm-hmm. So, nice, yeah, I just hope. I hope I can hope. I can find, you know, a really good evidence so that it will be implemented. So, at early stages of the project, yeah. But going in the right direction.
it sounds like it, and having looked at your presentation and having spoken with you a little bit, I'm really excited about where this is going, and I think the findings are looking promising, but who knows? I mean, I don't want to.
As a researcher, I have to be objective.
Yes, be objective. And, be objective.
But, you know, if I don't get, you know, there will be reasons around what I need to change. So that's fine too.
Absolutely,
know?
Right?
And so it is developing. Even after the first pilot, there's things, you know, that need to be tweaked and changed. So, it's ongoing. It'll never be still.
No.
It'll continue to move. And,
and one of the things that you said earlier today, which really struck with me, was the lack of empirical research that has been done around trauma-informed. And so I think that that's a really important thing to keep in mind, that we are new to much of this research, and that no matter what we find, it will help us along the path to be more effective in working with children, youth, and families, and foster families.
Absolutely, yes, indeed.
Thank you very much for joining me today, Maria.
Thank you.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.